I'm Gab. He's Jules. Gray, horrid skies over West London. Metaphorically, but I'm sure it's sunny and bright in North London because Arsenal win the North London Derby. They extend their lead at the top of the table. We'll be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about the other Derby, the one in Manchester, and a controversial decision. We have a Clasico in the Super Cup. We have Atalanta scoring 8 goals. How about that? We have Paris Saint-Germain. We need so much to talk about. But let's start at the place that we used to call White Hart Lane when it was a different stadium. It was next door. I thought this was, you know, you look at the table, you look at Arsenal's lead, and you say, okay, these are situations where they can draw points. Doesn't matter that Tottenham have been on the slide and everything. It's a derby. The wheels come off. But once again, with a little help from Hugo Lloris, and even beyond Hugo Lloris, those first 45 minutes, I thought, were really impressive. You can you want to parse those two goals out? Fine. It had been 0-0 at halftime. I would be sitting here really praising Arsenal's performance in that first half.
Yeah, it was a demonstration of football. I think they taught them a lesson. I mean, and the lesson for Spurs is that if you let this Arsenal team play, then they would just play you out of the park. And that's exactly what they did. There was too much freedom, too much time on the ball for a party, for Zinchenko, for the wide players. It was just too easy for Arsenal. They could have scored more. And even if, of course, the first goal, the mistake by Lloris, changes slightly the dynamic. But before that, Nketiah had a chance. And after that, they go chance after chance. And I was very surprised by the lack of intensity from Spurs in that first half again, because apart from the fans who were really up for it, and I was at the game, it didn't feel that the Spurs players were playing a North London derby. It felt like they were playing Aston Villa or some team like that. They were not in it.
See, you can't have it both ways if you're Antonio Conte. You can't be Mr. Intensity and then not transmit that to your team. I thought that was missing. And I thought, obviously, he made some tactical errors in the way he set up as well, which didn't help the team. I thought Spurs were better in the second half. They did create some chances.
Yeah.
Still thought Arsenal had the upper hand, you know, throughout on the balance of opportunities.
If Arsenal played like champions in the first half and defended like champions in the second half, that's what they did. And Ramsdale had a great game, and Spurs I think have the same high expected goal than Arsenal. So they had their chance, but Arsenal played really like leaders.
Do we fault Hugo Lloris for the second goal too?
Nah, come on. He doesn't see the ball leaving. And I'm sorry, Romero can't turn his back. This is not how you defend. Come on. Odegaard is where you are. I'm Romero. And what? I don't come for the block. I just turn my back and hope for the best. This is not defending.
And I guess it's a question of which world champion you want to blame. Romero,
I blame Sessegnon for the first goal as well, to be fair. So it's never.
Oh, yeah. So it's all on Sessegnon. Yeah.
Okay.
We have to talk about what happened at the very end. I'm going to try to sum this up as fairly as possible because I think there was something that happened before which people sort of forget. So it's the end of the game. Ramsdale, obviously what we saw was Ramsdale going to collect his water bottle, which he had left on by the board behind his goal. And then there's a fan who, in a very weird, uncoordinated way, sort of jumps up on the hoarding and kicks him in the back, which leads to which sort of leads to a melee. Obviously, everybody agrees you can't do that. The fan will never, you know, should never. I don't think they have any trouble identifying him, too, because you can see his face. You can actually see. I was looking at I didn't notice the first time, but when I saw the afters again, you can see him after he does it. He realizes what he's done.
Yeah, he's trying to go quickly back.
He's scurrying up the thing while everybody's going forward shouting at Ramsdale. What I do wonder is what happened immediately before that. And by the way, I am not having it. Ramsdale was phenomenal in the game. It is intense. I'm just putting this out as a viewpoint of what happens in the interaction with fans, right? Just before that, if you watch any of the game, Ramsdale and Richarlison, they're kind of joking with each other. Moments afterwards, there's the win. Ramsdale, when he said afterwards he'd been giving stick to the fans, and it was back and forth, and some of the fans were enjoying it, and whatever.
So the goal was in front of the white wall, so the closest to the cup than if he had been on the other side.
At one point, Ramsdale visibly gets annoyed. I don't know, somebody shouted something or something, and he turns to the fans, and he says something
or shows the press.
And then that's when Richarlison goes over and starts wagging. And, you know, again, until 30 seconds earlier, these two guys were kind of yucking it up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, is it also, obviously I'm not putting any kind of blame on this, but is it also a reminder that, unfortunately, with stadiums the way they are, without barriers, and I think it's good that there are no barriers, you as a player have to remember that there are some crazies out there that will take any provocation.
You still don't think that someone is going to jump over the advertising board to kick you in the back, you know, like, so they give you stick, you give stick back, but you think he's safe anyway. So he's part of the game's
It's a fine line.
And I think, but it's a thin line,
I think what we might lose is that back and forth. These players are like, I'm not going to take a chance because 99% of those guys are going to be normal. We'll just give it back and forth. And then there's going to be the 1%. Who's going to go and do something stupid and dangerous, which is what happened here.
Yeah.
We're going to get into this game much more forensically and in a granular way on the Gavin Jules podcast. All right, Jules, let's get into this a bit more. And by the way, before people are having a go at me, let me restate for the record, I am not blaming Ramsdale in any way.
Nobody deserves this.
But I think if a fan in the midst of the emotion feels disrespected, most fans will react by calling Ramsdale a bad word or whatever. But there is that one guy,
one idiot,
potentially, who will go and do something dangerous. And I think...
But to be fair, this is Ramsdale's personality. He's been doing this all season and nothing had ever happened before Sunday.
Yeah, well, fortunately, it doesn't happen very
often. That's what I mean. Like, you know, I don't think he will change and he should not change because of one idiot.
Yeah.
Because that's what he does. But
it did appear, like I said, like to be clear on this, you know, when he said afterwards he was giving and taking it and it was good-natured, it certainly appeared very good-natured. It certainly was good-natured with Richarlison until that kind of final moment. I want to talk about Arsenal a little bit because obviously we saw standout performances from Partey, from Odegaard, from Zinchenko. I want to talk a little bit about the way Arteta sets up, because it certainly looks as if, you know, some people have it as a 4-3-3, some people have it as a 4-2-3-1, but the basic concept is when they're on the ball, Zinchenko comes inside and becomes an additional midfielder. And you almost have an overload on the left-hand side where you've got Zinchenko, Xhaka, and Martinelli, who are attacking on one side, and then on the other side, you have Bukayo Saka, because Ben White doesn't attack in the same way. It's almost as if it becomes like a back three, and then it certainly, I'm not saying it leans heavily to the left, because I haven't seen like sort of their heat map zones of attack, but it does seem as if the idea is you've got more men on the left-hand side. On the right-hand side, you've got more space for Saka, which I think suits Saka and Martinelli's skill very well. And I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Although there's a few times where White overlaps and you know, plays with Saka on that right-hand side when Zinchenko really rarely, I mean, he goes...
Zinchenko's not an overlapping fullback in the way White is.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And I think that's why the asymmetrical fullbacks is perfect. One is inverted, the other one is sometimes more of a centre-back, sometimes makes that run on the overlap. And it's just, I think the structure of that team is just absolutely perfect. And I know they're a bit short, and you know, if someone important gets injured, I think they would struggle to replace him.
Like, but Gabriel Jesus.
Yeah, but that's maybe the one position where they have someone who can come in who's still very good in what the manager wants him to do in Nketiah. But for other positions, it might be a little bit different. But the structure and the what everybody knows what to do, where the ball is and where your teammate is. So if Zinchenko comes inside, then Xhaka knows exactly that he has to cover a bit more on the Zinchenko side of things. And all of that, I think that drill is, they're so well drilled in the positional play and the awareness of where everybody is on that pitch. It's just, it was wonderful to see that first half, really. And again, I think they were helped by the fact that Spurs didn't put them under pressure whatsoever, which would be different when United go to the Emirates on Sunday. But still, it was a perfect, in terms of movement and organization and understanding of each other's position and where and what to do and where to be. It was perfect. It was really a perfect first half.
All right, a couple other points on Arsenal before we move on to Spurs, because I think there's a lot of questioning to be done of Conte's decisions here. One is that Partey shot, which he just hits so hard against the post. I mean, even in slow motion replay, it doesn't even look like slow motion. Rather, it's weird because the players are all in slow motion, but the ball just looks
so fast.
However, Tekker's moment, you watch it again. he doesn't hit the ball cleanly. He shins it.
He shins it, yeah. Which is fine. I mean, again, we said it.
It's not saying he didn't choose to shin it.
No. But I think the ball maybe comes at him so quickly and the balance of his body is perfect, but he's still with his shin. you were aware, but when Darwin Núñez scored that goal, shins it as well in the FA Cup. I think he was when Rooney is called one of the greatest goals of all time with his shin too. So it's not, we're not saying it's bad to shin the ball. It's not. However, you don't have the same.
You have no idea where the ball's going.
Yeah,
to go.
Some control of the ball.
And he's obviously not choosing to shin it. He's just trying to make contact somehow to send it towards.
It's still
the ball.
Hell of a volley.
It was unbelievable,
incredible, and he's had an amazing game. And to be fair, we were saying when we. Preparing for the show, the only defeat that Arsenal had, which was away at United with the goal disallowed as well for Martinelli at 0-0, Partey wasn't there in that game. He's unbeaten for Arsenal. He's been amazing for them this season.
We mentioned Spurs' lack of intensity, and obviously Richarlison is one of those guys who is Mr. Intensity. And even before when he was warming up, you saw a little bit of an edge between him and his Brazil national team teammate, Martinelli.
So when you at Spurs, you warm up on the by the touchline, of course, on the left of the tunnel, if you want. So that's where Arsenal were attacking in the second half, and Martinelli is about to take a corner, so he's at the corner flag, and Richarlison is there, kind of warming up. So Martinelli sees him and puts his hand out to kind of high five him or shake his hand, and Richarlison looks at him and just doesn't move and go like, you know, leave me alone kind of thing. And so the Spurs fans loved it. Of course, Martinelli was a bit kind of baffled. What? We're friends. We play together for our country. Why are you not? But it's a derby, and Richarlison was like, no way I'm shaking your hands right now at this moment in the game. And he was pumped. Why not bring him on early? Why waiting so long if you're Conte? And I know Spurs played better in the second half and were threatening at time. But like Richarlison is so added value when you're chasing a game like that at home with the crowd and everything. You played him on for the last 10 minutes. It made no sense.
So I think Conte would say, look, we still created chances in the second half. Ramsdale made some exceptional saves. We score a goal. And at 2-1, it's a derby. The whole ground comes alive. We come alive. We get back into it. I think that would be his explanation if he'd been asked that question,
as well.
Right?
You can do that with Richarlison as well.
So I think the reason he waited on Richarlison is that I don't think he wanted to lose his shape and move to, like, I'm giving you an explanation of what
I think went through his mind.
I'm not justifying it, right?
Yeah.
When Spurs go 4-4-2 or 4-2-4 or whatever, as we saw, Spurs get messy. Spurs get really messy, and I think they become more vulnerable, although they weren't good in the first half, but they become more vulnerable to the counter. And I think that was his concern. His control was, let's get back into the game by scoring a goal with our initial formation, 3-4-2-1. Now, hindsight, 2020, also, I would have thought that from what we've seen of Heung-min Son...
Or what we didn't see
from Heung-min Son, the logical thing would have been, if you're going to make a change earlier and you don't want to lose your shape, put Richarlison for Son.
100%.
On the other hand, Conte would say, if I put Richarlison for Son, I've got a problem because then I only have three strikers. I don't have another striker to bring on. Sorry, Brian Heal. Unless you want to talk about Brian Heal, right? I don't have another option there.
But what do you need another option?
Because towards the end, if it's 2-1, I want another attacking player on the pitch.
I know, but you keep Son, you play with 10 men. Because that's what, I mean, we all love Heung-min Son. Last season was an amazing season for him. But this season is not the same story. He's been dreadful for most of it, apart from the hat-trick in 30 minutes against Leicester 3 months ago. But apart from that, he's been anonymous at best. Yesterday, he was not in the game at all. They played with 10 men. And he missed a chance at the end when the shot was not on target. He got lucky to get a corner. But there was just nothing in his game. And I just think you kept him on. Why? You kept him on because you thought, but we have to keep him on because he can make something happen. No, he can't. This season, he cannot. Maybe last season, yeah. This season, he cannot make something happen out of nothing.
Look, I think these are the big calls that managers have to make. And from the outside, it always looks very obvious, right? This guy's not producing. You've got, you know, Brazil's starting center forward on the bench.
Yeah.
Bring him on in place of Son. On the other hand, I can also see his point, and I can also see how managers especially people like Conte, they have this thing about, you know, great players. And when he looks at, if you, you know, you would ask, like, who is Tottenham's most important player or most decisive player not named Harry, you would say Heung-min Son, right? But
not this season.
But,
yeah.
No, no, but I'm saying is...
In general,
Managers like Conte, and I think this has been a thing throughout his career, he has this idea of the champion, the superstar. And this has been a recurring theme with him. He's always slow to accept when the superstar isn't playing like a superstar.
Mm.
You know, he always seems to have this idea that, oh, but he can, even if he's playing badly, he can change the game for you.
Yeah.
And then maybe it's partly superstition. I know the analytics crowd wouldn't like it. The analytics crowd would look at it and be like, well, Son is doing this.
Yesterday was
like, I think this is one situation maybe. Where, with hindsight.
I
just don't understand.
And to be fair, I think he played and he backed up my point by saying after the game, I was kind of happy that we didn't lose our head to concede more goals. So he played not to concede more goals in the second half. And of course, they were never going to play as bad in the first half because they were terrible. So they were always going to be a bit better and be a bit more on the front foot, which they should have been from the beginning in a derby like this.
I want to ask about the front foot thing because effectively, I mean, on paper, it was a 3-4-2-1. In practice, it was a 5-4-1, right?
Yeah.
And not just that, but they seem to be happy to... also can see the flanks, you know, almost as if they're telling Arsenal, like, okay, go ahead, cross the ball, right? And, you know, ultimately they contained Arsenal. Most of the chances came from shots from, you know, from outside the box, whether the Odegaard one or the Partey one, the two Odegaard shots, actually, I think.
Yeah, but the two Nketiah chances, which are two big saves by Lloris, are, like, in the box, you know, like, through, well, Martinelli over the head and then the Xhaka through ball.
It looked to me, though, that kind of passivity, for a guy who's built his career on teams that are aggressive and intense and reflect his personality, I don't know what's going on. Is there something deeper there?
Maybe. I mean, to go back to your point, and I think it's a great point. So the Odegaard goal is a great goal. We said so much space for everybody, Partey to find Xhaka to win the second ball, all of that. But before that, at 1-0, Odegaard has the same shot, the one that Lloris saves on it's the same move. So if you're Conte on the bench or one of his assistants, or even if you are a Spurs player, you think, hang on, okay, this was too easy. We can't let that happen again because the next time, then Odegaard can score. And then 10 minutes later, exactly the same move. How you cannot react when you're Conte sitting down on the bench and say, hey, boys, you know, say to Saar, say to Højbjerg, say to one of the three centre backs, because let's remember, you have three centre backs for Eddie Nketiah on his own. How can you not say to a Longley or Romero Dier, if Odegaard is in that position, one of you has to come and close him down?
So I think the reason they didn't go and close it down is that they're playing too deep. I think that is on the midfielder.
They were 5-3.
I absolutely get that. And I think here you get to another decision that he made. And you don't want to be critical of a young player, but it is a very un-Conte-like move, based on what we know of his career and his trust of veterans and whatever, to go and to play and to give his starting debut to a 20-year-old guy like Papsar in a game like this, which is big. Not just a North London derby. There's top four implications or whatever. Now, obviously, there was no Bentancur, but he had Bissouma and Skip on the bench. You know, Skip, who they gave a new contract to earlier this year, by the way. So I'm assuming they're fit. I don't know.
Bissouma came on, so you think that...
That surprised me. Now, is this the kind of... Do you think this was Conte going out on a limb, or do you think this was saying, like, oh, let's try something different? Or
is he trying to make a point, again, about recruitment, and you know, and we're still in January, you can sign midfielders because look, I have to play this 20-year-old kid who is very talented but not ready for that kind. And then
I think he made two substitute appearances in the Premier League before this.
And I don't think Saar did badly at all, and I'm a big fan, obviously he was in France before, but I think that also impacts on Højbjerg, who then was trying to chase the shadow of Odegaard everywhere on the pitch, because I think Højbjerg also was quite conscious of, okay, why is the young kids going to do here? I need to cover? And I think that also impacted on Højbjerg, who didn't have he's been really excellent this season, Højbjerg. And so that maybe also played on Højbjerg.
And specifically on the Odegaard goal, if you remember, it was a goal kick from
A clearance from Lloris. I mean, it might not have been a goal kick.
I think it was a goal kick, actually.
No, was it? Okay, I thought it was Lloris playing long.
No, you're right. No, yeah, sorry. It was Lloris choosing to sort of punt it long in the air. The Arsenal defense recover it. Sarr tries to counter press, and the ball just goes past them. So, you know, maybe that is one of those mental errors that maybe Bentancur wouldn't make, or that you would expect Skip or Bissouma not to make. But how do we still feel about Spurs finishing top four if you're going to give me a percentage chance? Because they're 5 points back.
Yeah.
But you know what? If you look at I know it feels like it's later in the season than it is, but we still have more than half a season to go, or half a season.
Yeah. No, that's true. But they have to play City twice again. I mean, I know City. We used to say that by saying that, but they're going to lose twice, which is not the case right now with City. But just to highlight the fixtures, they will have to go to Liverpool. They will obviously host Chelsea. They've played Arsenal twice now, so there will be tough games to come, home and away for sure. I just don't. The gap is 5 points now, right. And I just don't think. I don't think the top four right now: City, Newcastle, United, and Arsenal will drop many points. I really don't think so. So it's a hell of a task for Spurs to make that ground back over. I think it will be United or Newcastle, potentially Newcastle, maybe the one really that they have to catch. I don't know.
They
will have to go to Newcastle, by the way, as well, because they lost at home against them.
I would view the fact that you're playing City twice as just a great opportunity. 6 points clear. You get 6 points off of City.
I can't believe you said that.
We have better goal difference because you didn't concede those extra goals in the second half.
Can't believe we said that because
we just City fans. But I'll tell you what, the way City have been playing, we'll see.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules.
All right, enough Arsenal. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Manchester United come from behind to win the derby against City thanks to late goals from Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford. Jules, we'll get to the controversy over the equalizer in a minute.
Yeah.
But let's talk United first. 9 wins in a row, 1 point off second place. What's going right?
A lot of things, Gab, a lot of things. I mean, again, we talked about the structure from Arsenal, the way they play. I think United finally have a structure that the players understand, that the players agreed to it. They've got a manager who has a clear direction of where he wants to go, who is a bit of a, lacks the authority, let's put it that way, which I think was needed in that club and in that dressing room. So you're not happy, you don't play. You're not doing well, you don't play. And it's working because everybody is on board, really. And they fight for each other. They play for each other. You can see that togetherness. You can see the team spirit, which we didn't really see before. And then when the manager tactically has the right ideas, like playing Christian Eriksen a bit higher up on the pitch to limit the influence that Rodri can have on the game.
Well, you can do that if you play Casemiro and Fred together.
Yeah, worked. And we saw Fred doing a very good job on Kevin De Bruyne for most of the game. Okay, not on the goal, but for most of the game. So the tactical plan was perfect. Of course, they got a bit lucky with the first goal that we will mention in the next quick hit. But overall, I thought it was just they planned it well, they executed it well, and you don't win 9 games in a row by being not always that convincing, but quite solid. Look at Luke Shaw, a centre-back. You know, this is Ten Hag's, kind of philosophy and work. And to see Luke Shaw doing so well in the position that is not his and had never been his before, I think the manager deserves a lot of credit. For me, he's the main reason, not the only reason, but the main reason why they're doing so well. And then Rashford is playing great. Bruno is playing great. Casemiro is playing great. All of that. Varane is playing great. So that helps. But yeah, well done to Ten Hag, really. Okay, Gabby, now, obviously, the decision which sparked so much controversy all around the world this weekend, should Marcus Rashford's goal have stood?
So, short answer, no, it should not have stood. And before people come out and talk about the laws of the game, but he didn't touch the ball and blah, blah, blah. So, these explainers, these writers, when they add the laws of the game, right? They moved it from interfering with play with interfering for an opponent. It comes down to the interpretation, right? And here, I've got the Law 11, verse 2. One of the situations which would suggest that a player offside would get a goal disallowed is if he makes an obvious action which clearly impacts on the ability of an opponent to play the ball. Now, Rashford runs along with the ball.
Yeah.
His body, it looks as if he's squaring up to pass or shoot.
Yeah.
For me, very simply, right, there are at least three City players that are very affected by this, obviously. Yeah. One is Akanji, but maybe wouldn't have caught him, whatever, right? Another one is Walker, and the way he angles his run, he's running towards Rashford. He's not running to cut out Bruno Fernandes, who's coming through.
Yeah.
And the third one, most of all, is the goalkeeper, Ederson. Really. Because if Rashford's not running with the ball, or if Ederson does not know that Rashford is offside,
yeah,
right? He shouldn't be expected to know. So he has to pretend. He has to play the whistle, right? If he believes that Rashford's onside, he's not going to come out and clear the ball away.
He's not even looking at Bruno. He's looking. This is Rashford is here. You're Bruno. I'm Ederson. I'm looking here. I'm never looking at where you are.
But
and you're going to hit the ball.
He's frozen where he is.
Yeah, and advanced because Rashford is getting closer to the box.
Now, if Rashford's not there, and technically because he's offside, he's not there.
No, yeah.
He just runs out and he clears the ball. Yeah. We've seen him do it a million times. So for me, it's pretty obvious. For me, it comes down to, I think the laws of the game are fine, but referees should be said, like, look out for these situations, because sometimes even if you don't touch the ball, you could easily be interfering with an opponent.
I completely agree with you. I think even Ten Hag, after the game, said that if I was in that position, I would find it difficult. So even he knew that the goal should not have stood.
Back to City. They were on their way to all 3 points with 15 minutes to go. But Jules, was this a good performance overall? And are they still in the title race?
They are, of course, in the title race, even 8 points behind Arsenal because they're City and because it's Pep and they've got KDB and Haaland and everything you want. But it was not a good performance. And there have been a few not good performances lately, really, if you think about it. And yeah, they scored the goal that Grealish scored. And after that, I mean, I don't know what you thought, but I thought, okay, this is it now. I don't think United have been good and there are chances in the first half at 0-0. But I didn't see City conceding two goals the way they did. And again, you know, if that goal doesn't stand, I don't know what the final score is. But it was not a good performance. Haaland was not in the game. I don't think because of himself, because I think he made some good runs that no one passed him the ball. I don't know what's happening with De Bruyne. I don't know what's happening with Foden, as Foden just lost. Foden and Guardiola, even if Foden started, they've kind of lost their relationship. I thought Gundogan should have started every single day of the week. You can't go to Old Trafford against a team so much in form and play Bernardo, De Bruyne ahead of Rodri, like, you know, with Rodri Burgess just behind them. For me, it lacked balance in that team. It lacked a bit of kind of defensive, more minded player. And I think Pep made a mistake.
I would agree with that.
A late Alexander Isak goals gives Newcastle a 1-0 win over Fulham, and they too are just 1 point behind City. But Gab, what did you make of the Mitrovic penalty that was disallowed?
It's correctly disallowed because he goes and, you know, he stumbles and he hits it twice. I don't think there's an argument there. However, what I do have a serious issue with is the fact that this penalty was given in the first place. There was a much more obvious one.
You don't think that one was a pen?
I don't think that was a pen at all. The Bobby Cordova-Reed and Kieran Trippier. Bobby Cordova-Reed steps on Kieran Trippier's foot. To me, that's never a penalty. What's concerning here is that the referee didn't give it as a penalty.
Yeah.
Mike Dean steps in and tells him to go look at the monitor. He goes to look at the monitor. And this is because Mike Dean is saying, you've made a big mistake. This should be a penalty. I don't know if Mike Dean didn't see And look, maybe just because you were a famous referee, I don't want to say great referee, but you're a famous referee who was around for a long time, means that you're a good VAR. It's a different skill set.
Yeah, very much so.
And this is one obvious situation. They should have given the one earlier.
Yeah, did they give the second one because they haven't given the first one, though?
Oh, come on, man. Like, if they do that, then Howard Webb should come out and say, I'm sorry, Howard, we love you. You inherited Mike Dean and this nonsense. Yeah. And you come out and you say, Mike, if this is how you think, then go get another job. Get out. See you somewhere else, right? You know, you never like VAR. You're not a specialist VAR. He shouldn't be VAR.
Why is he even? What, he needs money?
I don't understand. Just keep him on the books. I'm sure he made a good enough pension as a referee.
I thought he'd be tired.
It's a different skill set.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, hey, more quick hits coming your way. Barcelona destroy Real Madrid in the Spanish Super Cup. Classical, 3-0. Jules, this is a statement win, yes?
Yeah, very much so, Gab. They were wonderful, I have to say. So impressive in the way Xavi set up with the four really central midfielders, we can call them like that. Gavi, Pedri, Frankie and Busquets and Dembele and Lewandowski up front. That worked so well. They knew exactly when to slow the game down, when to accelerate. They really hurt this Madrid side. That was, I think, really missing Tchouaméni and Alaba to start with. I think Camavinga was too lightweight, made mistakes in that first half. And overall, I think, and Carlo says, physically, it's difficult for them, which you could see clearly. But they had no shot, nothing until the 70th minute. They were lucky to score even a goal at the end, and it could have been worse. So,
yeah, I said 3-0. I meant 3-1, of course.
But yeah, it was just...
Those defensive mistakes at the back. Let's be clear.
Yeah, Rudiger as well. Yeah,
Rudiger. I thought Dani Carvajal as well for the second goal. I mean, it's not the reason. It's not like this was a close game and then they made defensive mistakes. Even without those mistakes, even if they'd finished 1-0, it still would have been a completely lopsided game.
Yeah, you're right.
And I think that has to be a concern. And I don't want to go back to the transfer window's open, but. Transfer window is open.
No, you're right. Liverpool fall to Brighton 3-0 and Jurgen Klopp says it's the worst performance he can remember in his career. Is it right, Gab?
That's the thing. He said in his career. Yeah. Now,
wow, okay, that's a lot.
I do not remember every performance of Jurgen Klopp when he was at Mainz. I don't know. I'm sure they must have had some one-sided games. This is terrible. And look, sometimes more than one thing. You can give all credit to Brighton and our boy, Did Zadby.
They were amazing.
They were really, really good. Mm. But this was awful. And for me... Obviously, Liverpool having a lot of players missing, fine, fair enough. But for me, that midfield, that is the first choice midfield if it was a Champions League final, right?
Yeah,
Fabinho, Thiago, and Henderson. Jordan Henderson.
Yeah.
To see them play so limply, so lamely, that's got to be an issue. I know people focus elsewhere, and Joe Gomez and Trent defensively, and Oxlade-Chamberlain, whatever, and Cody Gakpo, you know, I think it was his first start in the league. You're fine. Oh, whatever you want. But it's that midfield that needs to lead you in these situations. And it's that midfield playing a certain way, which makes Klopp's brand of football.
Exactly.
Possible.
The midfield has always been the key for him. So,
Paris Saint-Germain fall against the mighty youngsters of Rennes 1-0. With what Rennes are pushing for the Champions League.
Yeah.
Jules, when I looked up at the end of the game, I saw Mbappe, Messi, and Neymar. I saw that they were all on the pitch. I saw Achraf Hakimi on the pitch. Hakimi and Mbappe coming on. They did not have a midweek game to save themselves for. Did they play badly because they were all looking ahead to that Coupe de France game next week against Caisse des Epaulettes or whatever the hell it is?
Yeah, sixth division team. I don't know, Gab. It was
one shot on target.
It was pathetic. The XG is 0.9 or 0.8. They were terrible. It really, really bad. Nothing in the game, no verticality, no collective, no patterns of play, nothing. I think they, since the turn of the year, so they lost against Lens, they struggled to beat teams like Strasbourg and Angers, who are bottom and second from bottom. And then they got beaten by a team that was much better than them on the night, that had a proper plan, played with a back five, with a really good plan, clear direction of what to do with the ball, without the ball, which was not the case of PSG, which was just like, with no spirit, just nothing. And I'm starting to lose my chisel around Galtier because I don't see the work that he's doing. I don't see anything from him in that team. And I'm starting to get really, really annoyed now. This was way back on Friday. We can just ignore it. We can't ignore it, sorry. But Napoli destroy Juventus 5-1 just in time for Juve's big shareholder meeting this Wednesday, guys.
This is the one where they're going to announce the new board, the new heads of the club, and Agnelli stepping aside and whatever. They had won a whole bunch of games in a row. I'm just going to say this, Juve fans. All those 8 games you won in a row, I think you really only played well against Lazio. A lot of those other games were against smaller teams.
Yeah.
They're okay against Inter, I guess. It's not the results. It's the performances. It's how you play. Because otherwise, chickens come home to roost. They were blown away. Hats off to Napoli. Mm. Kai Havertz pushes Chelsea past Crystal Palace to break a run of 3 straight defeats. Jules, how'd they look?
I thought at times they looked better than what we saw. I mean, it's not hard to do, to be fair. But again, the fact that it's a 1-0 win and they missed chances. Havertz could have had a hat-trick, probably a hat-trick of headers as well, easily. But they had no margin, though, because in the end, Kepa had to make some big saves, too. And they could easily have dropped 2 points that they didn't deserve. They deserved to win the game. But at least that sort of brings a bit of calm in it and a relief as well, for sure. And, Gav, there was an emotional memorial for your friend, Gianluca Vialli, of course, before kickoff. And as it was Chelsea's first game, of course, since he passed away. And you and Luca were very close, as I said.
Yeah, obviously I've known Luca for a very long time, and I purposely haven't really spoken out or written anything about it until now. And I'm just going to come out and say that, for me, he was a better person than he was a footballer. And obviously that's saying a lot because he was a phenomenal footballer. Yeah. It was nice to see the warmth, and it's a reminder of Chelsea in a different era. Chelsea, who under Luca, won 5 trophies in 2.5 years. And well before Roman, this is when Roman Abramovich was still messing around in Siberia with Luke Oil and Sibneft and stuff like that. So I'm glad he's so fondly remembered. We thought Mihailo Mudrik was going to Arsenal, but Chelsea trumped them at the finish line by offering Shakhtar 70 million plus 30 million in bonuses. And he was unveiled Sunday. Jules, what do you think? And what's the deal with a 7.5-year contract?
Yeah, I mean, an incredible, twist, of course, because Arsenal had been negotiated for a while. Just Chelsea arrived and I was told the deal was done in 5 hours. You don't do a deal like this in 5 hours. It's never been seen before, not of this caliber, not with that money involved. But Chelsea just gave basically everything Shakhtar wanted and the player wanted, the double, the wages, the commission, everything you want. So good luck to him. It's a lot of money for someone who is still so young at that kind of level, hasn't played much games in Champions League, for example, or with Ukraine or even in the Ukrainian League. And we see in the length of the contract, the amortization helps you.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
But it's still a big gamble. Ties you in.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's still going to ask for a raise if he does well.
You commit a lot of money. Milan held at Lecce 2-2 after being 2-0 down in the first half, and it could have been worse. And they could have considered third as well. Gab, you're right. They're still second, but it's not a good run at all.
No, not a good run. They look tired. They look spent. One of the few people who's actually working well is Giroud and Benacer, despite signing a new contract. Yeah. They need to figure this out post-haste. Atletico Madrid are held at Almeria 1-1. Jules, they kind of threw this one away, didn't they? I mean, they're still fourth, but there's another 5 teams within 2 points behind them.
Yeah, not the moment to drop points, really, and not that way either. I know he was away from home, but they took the lead and they created enough chances to be clear. Completely.
They didn't play that bad.
No, I don't think they did. I mean, we knew they need a striker that we score, that we convert the chances, I think.
Okay, Morata thanks you for the show of confidence.
Yeah, sorry, Alvaro, but you know what I think of you. Anyway, but this has happened so many times already this season that it's not a surprise anymore, because I saw Marcos Llorente in his post-match interview saying, it's really difficult when you go through a game like this and you drop 2 points. I know, but you're the only ones to blame. You was on the pitch and El Cholo, I think. So it's a difficult season for them, even if they're still, of course, capable of finishing top four, but it's going to be a battle because there's a lot of teams around them. Gab, I know you're a big Memphis fan, of course, and Barca are ready to move him on to continue with Atletico Madrid, talking about a striker there. And there's also an Inter option.
Okay, so the Inter option is reported in Italy is a swap to Depay for El Tuco Joaquin Correa from Inter. I do not see why Barcelona would do this. I say this with the greatest respect to
another
El
winger?
Tuco Correa. Yeah. You can play him as a second striker. But it just makes zero sense to me. Yeah. I'm going to take the Atletico Madrid one more seriously. What I think is interesting is, you know, I think Depay is the kind of guy who can make, if he's fit, he makes any team instantly better because you don't have to worry about positions, whatever, he's going to create out of nothing. And I think he showed that he can be disciplined and respectful and fit into a team. For whatever reason, Xavi made different decisions. I would find it extraordinary if he goes to Atletico Madrid. I mean, given after Luis Suarez and Griezmann, like, 6 months to go.
I know.
If I'm Atletico Madrid, I say, all right, so either we take him in the free in the summer or... You just give them to us now, right?
Surely they won't do that.
I don't know how it got to this situation where they're so hell-bent on moving him on. You're stuck with him. And I get the whole argument with Barcelona's finances. Yeah. But, I mean, we're talking ultimately, you know, damage is done. It's 6 months of wages. You don't have a transfer fee for him. I think they want to get a fee for him because, obviously, they signed him for nothing. And so, you know, that looks good on the books. But it's not a great situation. For Atleti, though... The thinking is, obviously, with Mateus Cunha moving on.
And João Félix.
They only have three strikers left, right? Ángel Correa, Griezmann, and Morata. But, you know, it's not written in stone that you need to have four strikers. Maybe there's a kid. Maybe it's somebody else. Maybe you play Lemar further up the pitch or Depaul further up the pitch or whatever. There are solutions that you can come up with. And certainly I would expect Simeone to come up with other solutions. So I think if you're Atleti, just wait till January 31st, see if somebody else comes out there. If it's on your terms, go for it. If not, you know, Memphis can wait. Bayern return to the pitch next Friday against Leipzig. Yeah, and as it stands, Sven Ulreich will be in goal. Jules, they keep talking to Jan Sommer. There was a crazy story involving them and getting Gregor Kobel from Borussia Dortmund, which I think... I mean, let's face it. I know we joke about the Bundesliga. PR-wise, the Bundesliga had a commissioner, you would block this move. This is just humiliating. Alexander Nubel, though, looks like he's not moving. He continues to. He's on loan in Monaco. Yeah. He starts every game.
Yeah.
What are they waiting for?
No, I don't understand. And maybe they think that Ulrich can see this out until the second half, for the whole second half of the season. We're not even sure Neuer can come back for the start of next season. And Neuer is 36, so at some point you need a replacement where you thought you had with Nubel, but he doesn't want to come back because he doesn't want to be just playing while Neuer is not there. He wants guarantees, which you can understand for a young goalkeeper like him.
No, I can't understand it. Come back, play for Bayern until the summer, and if Neuer comes
Monaco don't want to let him go either.
No, that's fine. I understand Monaco's position, but for Nubel to say, no, I don't want to come back because I don't want to be Neuer's backup, you're not. You're going to be competing with Sven Ulreich for a job. You'll beat Sven Ulreich. The other thing, too, with why they need another goalkeeper is the dude who backs up Sven Ulreich, I'm blanking on his name, but it's some guy you're short. You know, you're legitimately short here.
I don't know. I mean, I guess Jan Sommer might be to convince Gladbach to sell. I don't, you know, I think Gladbach wants a fee that Bayern don't want to pay. I think Sommer is ready to go to Munich as well. I think it would be hard.
But it feels like you're arguing over small amounts of money when you do. Leipzig is a head-to-head game.
Yeah, it's massive.
The stakes to me are much higher. I find this odd.
Zika is best, you know.
Yeah.
Lautaro Martinez fires Inter past Verona and they stay third in Serie A. Gab, your thought on that game?
I think Inter were looking ahead to, obviously, the Super Cup in Riyadh. Riyadh, you're home for Super Cups. But Lautaro, I think, is in great form. Çalhanoğlu also in good form in the middle of the park for Inter. That's kind of all they needed. They mixed and matched where Gagliardini started and whatnot. Barella came out at the end. It's fine. You had to get the 3 points in. I would feel more comfortable from Inter's perspective if they could score more than one goal and not be in a situation where at the end you're like, oh, one mistake and we've dropped points again. But you know what? they're right up there. They're 1 point off second place. That's fine. But how about some love for Real Sociedad?
Oh, yeah.
7 wins in a row for a boy Imanol, including Saturday's 3-1 victory over Athletic Bilbao in the Basque Derby with a goal from the only living Sorloth in captivity and his little friend Kubo.
I know. I mean, Kubo, great goal again. Sorloth as well, great feet. I thought, and he's got what a performance from La Real, because there was, I think, Athletic Club were never really in the game, let's be honest here. Real Sociedad were too good, too good. Brilliant in midfield with David Silva. Just everything they have, what Imanol has been building there, has been great. They're third in the table, looking really, really good for a Champions League place. And, you know, it's one of those where you watch them play. This was great publicity as well for Basque football, because we know that all of Athletic Club players are from there, of course, but even La Real had plenty of players from there. I think it was maybe 18 out of the 22 starters or something. I counted them on Friday or on Saturday. And it was just brilliant. The atmosphere was great. Everything was great.
And imagine if Oyarzabal had been fit from the start of the season. Imagine.
Yeah, you're right.
Because they're not that far behind Real Madrid and Barcelona.
Right. That's very true. Ugly scenes at Everton now, Gabby, with Anthony Gordon abused by fans on his way out of Goodison following the home defeat to Southampton and widespread protest against the board, who were advised to stay home, and stayed home, by the way, on Saturday. This is really ugly.
Yeah, and reports too that Denise Barrett Baxendale, who's the chief executive, that somebody put her in a headlock. Like, maybe I'm old school on this, but first of all, that is physical assault.
Yeah,
and
completely.
That brings charges.
Yeah.
That's open and shut. If on top of that, and maybe I'm being sexist here, if it was a dude who did that, then, I mean, I foresee far worse things here. But I don't want all this business with a sit-in and the protests and people getting angry to overshadow the fact that these people have very legitimate gripes about the way their club has been run. They've called Bill Kenwright out. He's been there for 18 years. He's been responsible for this. We can't shy away from that. And we can't shy away from that from one other thing, too. There's a report in The Guardian saying that Alisher Usmanov, who, you know, well, he's under Russia sanctions.
Yeah.
He was present when different managers interviewed for the club. I think they cited 5 different managers. You can't have this situation. You already have a screwy situation where the club is owned by Farhad Moshiri, right?
Usmanov has minority shares or not? He's got, doesn't have any shares.
I don't believe
anymore.
He has any shares.
Okay.
And what happened was Moshiri was Usmanov's accountant. They both had shares.
Business partners. Yeah.
The thinking is Moshiri is a straw man for Usmanov. Now, because Usmanov can't own the club, then Moshiri owns the club. And look, Moshiri's always denied that. He said it's his money. We'll see. But what we do know is Usmanov, despite not owning the club, sponsors the club. Yep. Obviously, that sponsor has been put on hold because of sanctions.
But he's very present, yeah.
But you know what? Hey, Premier League, let's have some clarity here. Let's have some actual rules. This is Moshiri's money. It's not hard to get a forensic accountant to come out and say, this is what happens.
Yeah.
Now, if it's Moshiri's money because he got all the money because he sold like a ballpoint pen to Usmanov for $500 million, let's find out. Tell us. And then we can make up our own minds on this. But you have to have rules. You have to have clarity. You can't have this continuous confusion. This is a club that in many ways has done things the right way. They've obviously the stadium development continues.
The training
they've pushed the kids. Obviously, they've made mistakes with directors of football and with managers. But there's a fan base, which I think has been really badly let down, not just by the people who run the club. And of late, obviously, it's been Kenwright and Moshiri and others. But also, I think, by the Premier League, you have to have oversight over the clubs about how they do business and who they do business with.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not just Mudrik, Jules.
No.
Chelsea continue to be linked with strikers Marcus Thuram and Nani Madueke, who, for those who don't know, plays for PSV Eindhoven, but is actually English.
Yeah.
I believe former Spurs, former Palace even. Very, very young, so I think 19 years old. And perhaps most interesting, defensive midfielder Moises Caicedo. Who would imagine that, a manager raiding his old club?
I mean, why would you stop spending the money? It's already $500 million pretty much since the last transfer window in 6 months, which is as much as Liverpool in the last 10 years. They've outspent the whole 19 other clubs in the Premier League put together. This month is crazy, and there's still 2 weeks to go. I mean, for me, the priority, and we said, Joao Felix and to some extent Mudryk makes sense if you have a goal scorer with them now, because there's none right now. I don't believe in Kai Havertz. And even he said it after the game yesterday, I don't score 25 goals a season. Everybody knows that.
He said, I play as a nine. He didn't say I am a nine. Yeah. He says, I play as a nine.
Exactly. But for me, the priority now that you got Mudryk and Joao Felix and you may be okay for the attacking positions, maybe, is in midfield. The midfield needs redone completely, refurbishment, whatever you want. If you can get Caicedo, I don't know what the price would be, crazy for sure, but if you can get him, go for him. I mean, watching the Brighton performance against Liverpool, him and McAllister were just outstanding in midfield, that partnership. And Caicedo, I think, would improve Chelsea massively. I think he would improve a lot of teams massively. I don't think Brighton will let him go in January, but you might be able to do a deal and leave him there on loan. I mean, I don't know what can happen, but for me now, the priority has to be in midfield.
Even more so than this Thuram.
I would love to see Marcus there.
The one thing I will say is,
Marcus would be cheap.
If something, because he's 6 months away from free agency, but if something happens to Kai Havertz up front, or if he gets suspended or whatever, then you either have this Aubameyang freak show situation.
Yeah, that's not possible.
Which is obviously not viable.
No.
Or what?
Oh, yeah.
Raheem Sterling plays up front when he's back.
Felix. No, I know.
Joe Felix is your center forward?
No, I know.
Oh,
I know. So let me rephrase. Priority is in midfield. No. Priority is as a striker too. I get you that.
What I'm saying is there's multiple priorities. And this is how dysfunctional it is that you can spend all this money. You bring in these experts. All right, the experts have only just come in. But
True. But for example, Madueke for £40 million, I would not understand.
No, it makes no sense.
You need the striker and you need the midfielder far more than another wild player, as talented as he is and as exciting and as young as he is, I would not get that unless you get Madueke and a midfielder and a striker.
There will be people who are telling Todd Boehly, maybe on his... it's weird because there was some suggestion that he did a Twitter Spaces.
Yeah.
He was listening in.
Yeah,
but
I'm not sure.
Clear if it's actually him or if that's... Well, whatever. But... They went for Enzo Fernandez, right?
Yeah.
They inquired about him, right?
Yeah. More than that, even, yeah.
So obviously you need to play. But again, Enzo Fernandez is a different profile from Moises Caicedo.
Completely.
So who are you signing? What are you trying to do? What is your profile of midfielder? And there's going to be people who are saying, careful with Caicedo because, we already have Conte and Jorginho and Gallagher. And like, guys, Conte's injured. Conte ain't walking through that door for a very, very long time, if ever, right? Jorginho's out of contract in the season. Yeah. Plus, every time he plays, you're like, oh, he's too soft. You don't like him. We don't, So you need bodies.
You need bodies in
that area of the park.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Roma beat Fiorentina 2-0 as Paulo Dybala turns on the style. I mean, what a performance he had. Gab, you were skeptical, like me, about his signing in the summer. I think like a lot of people, to be fair.
And I am still skeptical about the length of his contract and the amount of money that they're paying him, but there's no question that...
Where would they be without him?
Well, you know what? He's only started, I think, 11 games this season. So, he was out. He missed a chunk of time to injury and stuff like that, which is one of the concerns that you have when you put all your eggs in the Dybala basket. But we saw the best Dybala. He linked up very well with Tammy Abraham, and it was an impressive win. Now, can Roma get into the top four, which is the age-old question, when, they still have Lazio ahead of him, they have Atalanta ahead of him? I think it's going to be a climb. I think, obviously, Mourinho's been hit by the injuries to Wijnaldum and whatever. But, by the way, another word on Mourinho, talking about managers who like veteran players but then kind of change and play kids. He played kids. Zalewski's now a reality.
Really
Balve is another guy who was on the pitch. So, well done to Mourinho. Back to Newcastle. Joe Linton started against Fulham despite being charged with drunk driving. Eddie Howe said that he, quote, showed remorse. He wasn't sure about playing him, but he said he was sorry. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I guess so. Everybody can make a mistake. I think you're allowed a second chance. I think if we were not there when Eddie Howe had the meeting with Joel Linton, say like, you know, what happens? I don't know exactly. But if Joel Linton said, listen, I made a mistake, I won't do it again. I want to play right. and all of that. I think as a manager and as a like kind of guardian of this squad and this dressing room, you have to believe him and trust him. And, you know, Eddie Howe is a good guy. He would not, you know, he has convictions as well. He would not play him if he didn't feel it was right. So, yeah, I'm okay with it.
It also comes down to, is it your employer's... So, first of all, he's been charged for now. I don't think he's been found guilty, right?
Yeah.
We don't know what the exact context about whether this is innocent. We know if he is going to be found guilty. There's a broader conversation of whether is it up to your employer to punish you or is it up to the law to punish you. I think if you show contrition, you're not necessarily bringing, you know, I can live with it. I don't know what decision I would have made had it been in Eddie Howe's shoes, but I can live with the decision he made.
Fans of Roma and Napoli have been banned for traveling to away games for 2 months following the clash that they had a week ago on that motorway junction or petrol station or services. Was it the right decision, Gab, to ban them for 2 months? Should it have been tougher?
I don't like it when people ban entire sets of fans rather than individuals.
Yeah.
But I also think at some point, you know, and a lot of these individuals have been charged, but I think you have to make a statement. And this sends a statement. This is absolute nonsense, right? They weren't even playing each other, but basically they kept tabs on each other. They were both traveling to different games. Yeah. And so they agreed to meet up, you know, near the rest stop. And get into a fight. And they were all armed. Police were already there because they'd been tracking them. This is ridiculous. You want to have your fight club, you know, go and do it in a forest somewhere. Don't stop a motorway because of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, again, these guys won't travel. It's unfair to other fans of Roma and Napoli who might have enjoyed traveling to away games. But if this is what you have to do, you have to do. I mean, it's a good thing that we've come to the point where this kind of stuff doesn't happen in and around stadiums.
Yeah.
So that's the encouraging thing. Yeah, yeah. At some point, these are adults. If people want to go and make an appointment out in the field, bring your own weapons and beat the crap out of each other, there's only so much that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
The Marseille bandwagon rolls on, Jules. It's now 7 in a row after 3-1 win against Lorient. How about Igor Tudor? Tudor sedan delivering again.
And they played so well, really, really well. They went 1-0 down against the run of play and on a set piece. But after that, they were brilliant. Alexis Sanchez was amazing again. Scored. He'd been through a bit of a drought, but now he's on top form again after, I guess, the break for the World Cup. But they played so well. And again, we talked about PSG's lack of direction and collective strength. Marseille have plenty of that. They know exactly how to play. They've got the wing backs. Kolasinac scored again. Great goal. I don't think any other clubs in Europe have scored more goals with defenders and full backs or wing back, if you want, than Marseille. This is part of their game. They're so good at it. Well done to Tudor. I think a lot of people, and including the fans, were skeptical when he arrived and he turned things around.
Has he run them over?
Yeah, completely. And they're in the title race. There's 3 points between PSG and Lens in second, and 4 or 5 between PSG and Marseille, with obviously still one classic to be played. So it's going to be very exciting, and you know, well done, really well done to them.
They like their oddball, eccentric managers in Marseille. Look at Sampaoli, you know.
But all the intensity that they have, PSG don't have, and I think right now this is the key, and this is what set them apart. Sébastien Haller is back in training for Borussia Dortmund, and more than that, even played and scored in a friendly. But the spotlight is on another striker, Gabi, Youssoufa Moukoko, whose deal expired at the end of the season, of course.
At the end of next season,
Sebastian Kiel says he expects an answer from the Moukoko camp this week about an extension, of course. How important it is, do you think, to keep him?
So he's 18 years old. Obviously, if he doesn't sign this contract, then they should sell him in the summer.
Yeah.
And we've said before, the logical thing if I'm Moukoko is I extend the contract, I get some security, I make sure that there's a release clause in there that, you know, allows me to move for a reasonable sum and also gets Borussia Dortmund some money. I think it is important because you don't know what condition Haller is going to be in when he comes back. You know, Moukoko, I think he's what, like 6 goals in 8 starts in the Bundesliga this season, something like that.
He went to the World Cup.
He showed he's productive. He's still just 18, although there are, you know,
reports,
there's reports in Austria. I trust the German FA on this. They've done a lot of studies to kind of clarify this. But, yeah, you know, whatever his age is, he's effective. And he's the kind of player you want to keep.
Hmm.
Leandro Trossard's future remains in doubt at Brighton after his falling out with De Zerbi. Jules, the club say the door is open for return. His agent says it might be best if he moved on. Yeah. He's a really, really good player. Yeah, De Zerbi made a big call, I think, in leaving out. Although the kid who started, this Ferguson guy,
yeah,
wow. Like, I know. 18 really years kid. Old.
Yeah, 18.
I mean, different profile from Trossard, obviously, but... how do you see this? Who's at fault?
He's 6 months away from the end of his contract as well. So I think if you're Trossard and his agent, you know you're going to leave in 6 months regardless. So maybe you want to move now because you know that you don't get on with the Zerbi, who didn't like his attitude, didn't like his productivity at training and in games, I guess, because he had his chance under the Zerbi. It's not like if the Zerbi arrived and straight throws him out. He played him and played him a lot. And I don't know. I think De Zerbi said that he just made his decision and he's clear and everybody knew it and they did nothing wrong. The Trossard camp say it very differently. I just don't think personally that there's a way back. I think Brighton should get a bit of money for him now and just let him go. The team is doing so well without him. You can maybe even reinvest that money or use someone like Undav that you haven't played much. Like all of that, I think there's a solution there where everybody would be happy, in my opinion. But you know, it's still always sad to see someone who's been good for that club.
Yeah, no, it's such a relationship with the club and such a big part of their success.
Yeah, for sure. Atalanta destroys Salernitana 8-2. Gab, I thought they were supposed to be more defensive this season. 8 different goal scorers, by the way. And tell me about Rasmus Højlund.
Yeah, let's see. Big, tall, Scandinavian striker. Danish. Name starts with an H, ends in an ND, you know. Not as good as the other one, but they're very excited about him. Look, I think they still have a good scouting system. They've spent the money that they've earned. It took a while to get together. It was one of those games where like every shot went in.
Yeah,
once you're 4-0 up against Salernitana, they say, like, we're not going to take our foot off the gas. Yeah. We're just going to keep going. So well done them. I don't see them making top four, but they're right up there with Lazio. Mm. They're not far off.
No,
I think,
definitely not.
You know, it would be quite a second half of the season if they manage to achieve that again. The Parc des Princes is my favorite stadium in Paris, Jules.
I love
also
that. Thank
because
you.
The Stade de France is not in Paris, technically, and I still need to get to I hear good things about the Red Star Stadium, that it's very historic.
Oh, yeah,
and
it's not nice, but it's very historical, but it's falling apart.
So why would PSG be leaving the Parc des Princes? You're in the wealthiest arrondissement in Paris.
Yeah.
You're convenient to the périphérique.
Yeah, they don't want to leave. They don't want to leave. But they feel like they have to leave because they're trying to buy the stadium off the city, of the mayor, so they can make refurbishment. They can extend it further from 47,000 to 57,000. They said that they need 500 million euros of work to be done on it. But they said, we won't spend that money if the stadium is not ours, which in a way makes sense.
I just signed a long lease with the...
Well, they're already on a lease for another 30 years, I think, or something like that. But they said that, you know, that's not enough. They want to own it. If you own it, you can maybe redevelop it in a different way than if it's still owned by the city, I guess. But the city have said, and Anne Hidalgo, the mayor, said on Sunday, like, our position is definitely not for sale. So PSG is saying, well, we have to go then. We have to leave. And they are looking at other options where they could go.
You said they have another 30 years?
I think so. Maybe a bit less than that, maybe on that lease.
But, okay, so they're going to leave at some faraway point in the future, right?
Well, they can leave whenever. Well, I mean, I think they can find
if they have a lease, they have to keep paying, no?
Yeah, although I think maybe it's not as long then. I don't know. I think they're very unhappy. The mayor and the city are saying, listen, we've had negotiation about you buying it, but the offer that PSG made was far too low for what the city would want. And now the city is saying, and by the way, the Parc des Princes belongs to Paris and to the Parisians, not to the football club. So I don't know where this is going. I think this is each other putting pressure on the other and stuff like that. I don't see PSG not playing at the Parc des Princes.
As a PSG fan, do you want them to move to the Stade de France
definitely
to build
not.
Their own stadium
definitely
outside? Because it's not like in Paris there's all this open space to build
definitely
stadiums.
Definitely not
right?
either. They could go to Saint-Cloud, for example, which is very close to where the Parc to Port d'Auteuil, but it would not be the same. So I think a lot of fans would want to stay, but not at any cost either. You know, I think.
Could they move to Lusail Stadium in the city of the future and commute?
Imagine.
Pretty cool, huh?
Great idea. I mentioned the idea to them if you want. FIFA introduced new regulation capping agent commissions from October 1st, but Gab, the agents are fighting back.
Yeah, so obviously this is all part of the FIFA Reform Committee and the clarity. And if you want to get really granular on this, we did a Gab and Jules Meets podcast with Giovanni Bianchini, the agent, who explained the agent's position, I think, very, very clearly. They don't just cap the regulations, they don't just cap the commissions. And by the way, again, for people who still don't get this, when we talk about, especially if you're in the U.S., we're talking about agents. A lot of the money that these agents move isn't from representing the player, where, you know, they negotiate the contract for the player and the player pays them a percentage, which is how agents are normally understood. They generally get paid by the clubs, which you could argue is a conflict of interest. And let's face it, it probably is. Yeah, yeah. Sometimes they get paid by the buying club and the selling club and the player as well. These are all things that they want to stamp out. The agents feel that there hasn't been enough consultation on it. Some of them feel that just the principle of capping commissions is wrong. I personally don't see the need to cap commissions. I just want transparency. I want to get paid. You can pay. I've said this all along. I don't care if you get paid $50 million to move Aaron Wan-Bissaka to Everton for, you know, I don't care on a free transfer. No, I really don't care. But I want somebody writing down on a piece of paper, Jules was paid $50 million.
Yeah.
And then that way people can hold clubs to account and hold people to account.
Yeah, no,
until we have the transparency, these problems aren't going to go away.
Yeah.
Monaco destroy Ajaccio 7-1 to rise to fifth in Ligue 1. Jules, they've blown hot and cold this season. Yeah, they've lost some players already, but this is impressive.
Really impressive. And a hat-trick for Wissam Ben Yedder, who is 31 now and has been playing, not playing, on the bench, some starting.
Underappreciated, I think, in the wider world.
Maybe. An amazing striker. He scored the hat-trick in 13 minutes, which is not the quickest he had, because at the end of last season, I think in May, it was in May 2022, he scored one in 10 minutes in Ligue 1 again.
I remember you chose him to play up front in Battle of the Leagues, if you
he's
recall.
He's amazing at FIFA, on the video game, if you play FIFA, by the way. Well done to him, and he's obviously Paris-born and bred, so even more special from Wissam Ben Yedder. Very good for Monaco, but like you said, Gabi, now they need to follow this up by consistency at that kind of level with those kind of wins. They've been a bit up and down so far this season. That's why they're only fifth and still trying to find an identity there with Philippe Clément. Steven Gerrard continues to be linked with the Poland job. Why? And he's expected to make a decision this week. Gab, is this a good idea? Like, am I weird for thinking it's not a good idea?
You mean for Gerrard or for Poland?
I mean, maybe both.
Like, according to reports, he's been offered the job and you say yes or no. I think it's a gamble for 101 different reasons. We've always said this, right? When you have a guy who, as a player, only ever experienced one club, you know, that's not an ideal situation. His managerial experience, obviously, was at Rangers, a little bit in Liverpool's youth setup, and at Aston Villa. I think it would make Gerrard a better manager because it would allow him to experience a very different reality. Maybe he's more suited.
That make, at that age and with the little experience that he had, is a national team that you see once every month for 10 days.
But I think it would force you to travel, to keep track of all the Polish players around Europe. It would force you. It would be a challenge. It would be, look, I'm putting myself in charge thing, right?
You've got all
the money that you'll ever need, right?
Yeah, true.
You are seen as having been ineffective at Aston Villa, right?
Yeah.
So your next job...
Season, not so much last season, but this season.
Your next job isn't going to be at a club. It's not going to be a more prestigious job than Aston Villa, right? We agree with that? Your next job in the Premier League, if you don't take this job, if you don't go anywhere else, your next job will be at a club that is Aston Villa level or lower, right?
Yeah.
Most likely lower, right? Could you go back to Rangers where you did well? Maybe at some point, if that's what you want to do. Presumably it's not what you want to do because you left Rangers.
Yeah.
Money doesn't come into it. So maybe it is about experience. And maybe this is the experience for you. Maybe it is, you know, if you go manage in another league, it's daily, it's week, you know, it's week on week. It's an intense thing. Something like this could be dipping your toe into a foreign experience. Maybe it makes you better. You see it as a growth. If he's talked to them until now, it's because he's seriously considering it, right?
Yeah.
So I would always urge somebody to challenge themselves and do that. Now, if I were Boniek or another Poland fan, I would say, whoa, hang on a minute here. This is my national team. We have the Euros in Germany next summer. We have Robert Lewandowski. Let's not mess around with this.
Not for much longer.
Let's not be again.
Lewandowski, there's a point where he will retire from international football. Yeah. So.
But we're going to stick around for the Euros, right?
We'll make the most of him.
Yeah, exactly. Now. Yeah. Exactly. Sevilla lose at Girona and are in the relegation zone, Jules. Oh. This is really bad for our boy Jorge Sampaoli. Yeah, is it still the one win?
Yeah, and we said, didn't we, when he was appointed, is that a good idea? Is he really the right guy coming back to a club where he's been before, of course, already? I mean, they took the lead as well in that game on set piece and, you know, Tanguy Kouassi and Yanzu scoring. But after that, they're so sloppy. They make mistakes all around the pitch. It's just like some of the basic stuff that you watch them play and you think like, really? But like, how can you make mistakes like that? I mean, even from a Sampaoli point of view, there's a lot of things that you struggle to understand. And it's just
that's kind of been the story of Sampa's career, right?
Yeah, true.
Many things you struggle to understand.
Yeah, completely.
Some of them work and are brilliant. Others,
But apart from having 10 good minutes there, 15, sometimes not even that, there's just not much in it. And I don't know what you do now if you're Sevilla. Do you like really keep faith in it when it's clearly not working? Now we've had, I think the sample was maybe smaller at the beginning. Now it's a bigger sample since he arrived. And
I mean, you see where you are at the end of the window. You give it February. And then, you know, they are in the relegation zone, but I don't. I mean, it's not like they're down, right? And then if you have to call some emergency, you know, Spanish Sam Allardyce to keep you up, that's what you do.
Yeah, maybe. The Financial Times report that Qatar Sports Investment have taken a minority stake in Braga, who have taken a minority stake in Braga. We know that 22% a few weeks ago, are now looking at Premier League clubs as well. Gabby, how significant this is or could this be?
So one of the things that they say is to avoid, before people get excited, like, oh, look, they're going to come here and it's going to be like Man City, but you're going to rebuild Paris. Yeah. They also make the point in the story that they're doing this because, you know, they have a portfolio. They do this to have leverage and clout inside, but they're very cognizant of the fact that if they buy a club in the Premier League, it's going to present a problem with Paris Saint-Germain. Now, obviously, Paris Saint-Germain, there's suggestions that it could be sold, the valuation of, I think he valued it at $4 billion, which I think is absurd that Paris Saint-Germain, who don't play in the Premier League and don't have the Premier League contract, should be, you know, it should be, what, a billion more than Liverpool.
Yeah, yeah.
But to me, and I could be reading this completely wrong, my reading here is that a lot of the people who spent money on behalf of Qatar for sport with a view towards the World Cup, possibly the Olympics and whatever, they're like, okay, now the World Cup's come and gone. How do we stay relevant? So let's find these investment opportunities. I don't see how having a minority stake in this club or that club is actually significant. You're not going to turn this into some kind of sports fund that people, that real people invest in, right? Ultimately, behind it is the Qatar Investment Authority, which is a sovereign wealth fund.
Yeah.
And as I've often said about sovereign wealth funds, and yeah, this applies to Manchester City, it applies to Paris Saint-Germain, it applies to Newcastle. My rejection of them is that it's not your money. It's the money that belongs to the people of that country.
Yeah.
And if this were such an obviously good, high-stakes investment, we would see, you know, other sovereign wealth funds do that. Norway, for example, I think they're the biggest or second biggest sovereign wealth fund in the world, right? Why don't they buy football clubs, right? Those Norwegian Manchester United fans, hey, you guys, you got so much money. Why don't you go and buy Manchester United and go and run it as a Norwegian? You know why they don't?
Because it doesn't
make sense. Not good business.
Exactly.
Kevin Spacey goes on trial in June in London, facing a total of 12 charges for sexual offenses against four men. And yet, he was a guest of Torino for their game against Spezia this weekend. In fact, the club's social media account even tweeted a picture of him with the club president, Urbano Cairo, that read, Kevin Spacey in the house, as if it was like 1980. Yeah. Jules, you're innocent until proven guilty, but this is somewhat tone deaf.
I'm flabbergasted, I have to say. I don't even want to say the guy's name. Maybe in Torino, I mean, in Turin, they don't have, the news didn't reach to them that the guy was surely not welcome, that it's not a good idea to just, you know, like, show yourself with him, to invite him as a guest. I mean, like, I just don't understand why. I mean, apart from the PR disaster that this is anyway.
Yeah. Hey, look, I mean, the number of people accusing him is well into the double figures. And look, maybe they're all wrong or mistaken, and maybe he'll be fully cleared. But when you have somebody who right now is perceived a certain way, why would you want to associate your name and your brand with that person? Why don't they invite Prince Andrew next?
Yeah.
I mean, if they want to go down that road. I mean, it's so odd to me.
It is. The Times report that broadcasters were given strict instructions during the World Cup not to show images of FIFA president Gianni Infantino on his phone. Dream games. I mean, Gab, this is a bit too much micromanaging, right?
So this was the host broadcasters that films the pictures for everybody. Yeah. So they were told that they need to film him at every game because, you know, he went to every single game.
Every single game.
To show that he's there and he's present.
Yeah.
But they mustn't show any pictures of him on his phone. Some picture of him on the phone went out in one game and the person was reprimanded for it. I'll say this, right? The man is the FIFA president. I want him to do his job as FIFA president. Yes. I don't care if he's watching the game or if he's on his phone on FIFA business. Frankly, yeah. I personally don't even care if he's there or not. but I can see how he would want to be there to show that he's there.
Yeah, of course, fair enough.
To me, this is because there's a lot of Muppets out there who, you know, one picture of him on his phone becomes, oh, look, it's all about business. He doesn't care about the game. He's not watching, you know, Portugal, Korea, whatever.
Yeah.
And, mate, what is this nonsense? We should be grown up enough. I want him to be on the phone if he's got work to do and he's got stuff to do. I don't want him just sitting there staring.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a weird one, but, yeah, it is micromanaging. But to be fair, that's what Gianni Infantino does. He micromanages a lot of things.
That's
true. Right, Jules, that brings us to an end.
Oh, man.
We got to come back on Thursday. I'm going to be back on Thursday. You're going to go watch some NBA hoops. Is that right?
Yes, in Paris, indeed. So there you go. See you next Monday.
There you go. Enjoy that. I'll be back on Thursday. We'll be talking Italian Super Cup and, of course, United and Palace. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.